You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 13 July. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you loud and recorded from my apartment in Bromfontein Vaf. Live shows back later this week. On the show today, Pietro Radenhaes, we're going to be talking some charts for the week. I checked with Stefan Engelbrecht on the many cases for being bullish gold. And Viv Govender, viewing Tesla as a tech stock, not a vehicle manufacturer. The show is proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Some morning headlines. Eskom power cuts to continue on Monday despite best efforts. And from CNBC, China's central bank sees little need for more emergency stimulus this year. Morning markets are green on Friday in the US. The S&P up 1.1%, NASDAQ up 0.7%. Asia also green, Sydney up 0.6, Tokyo very strong up 1.8%. Commodities, we've got oil slightly red, the rest green, gold still 1808, which is where it was Friday morning, Rand 1675, and top 40 calling for a green open, about 0.75% up.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Pietro Radenhaes. He's founder Herenia Capital Advisors. Pietro, appreciate your time this early and cold morning. You put out your sort of bunch of charts every Sunday afternoon. Chat a couple of those. One that top of the list, S&P 500. I mean, it's been an astounding run, but truthfully, that index is still going and Frank got more upside to it.
Yeah, good morning. I've been actually, I don't know, sometimes bias is a terrible thing. I've been in the fundamental camp over the last few months looking at this thing, thinking that, yes, you know, there's no logic between where the market is and what's happening in the economy, and, you know, at some mm-hmm. point it should come down. Thank goodness for technical analysis, though. So, you know, it just goes to show that the market is, we must follow the market and not try to impose our own view on it. And if you look at the setup at the moment, it looks strong. It looks like it's going higher. It isn't. There's two different charts that we put up, actually. One was just a chart sort of the S&P 500 futures contract, and then one was of the SPY ETF, which is mm-hmm. the... basically, it's a S&P 500 ETF trust, right? So the reason that there's a difference is because one trades 24 hours and one doesn't. One trades sort of normal market hours. So on one, it leaves gaps and all sorts of analysis yes. that we can do. And on the other one, it doesn't, because it's a futures contract for the most part, right? And both of them have very different setups on them. One is more like a gap fill type situation where it left a downward gap that market then bounced off of longer-term moving averages. Something's happened called a golden cross, which is something that long-term investors and long-term momentum traders use, which is the 200 and the 50-day moving average crossing over. So the 50-day crossed over the 200 from mm-hmm. the bottom, which is generally a buy signal against a longer-term resistance level, while the S&P 500 ETF is busy closing a gap. Those are all three very different reasons to be bullish, right?
Yeah, it is just, I mean, to your point, and the fundamentals aren't there, but the chart don't lie, and that's what's important. You also got a gold chart. Gold is consolidated for forever in a day. What I'm checking your chart here from back in April, it was pretty much in a sideways consolidation pattern, but it's out of that. It's broken up. It is bullish. I'm chatting with Stefan Engelbrecht in a moment about it. He's got a bunch of reasons, and your chart is saying this thing's going higher, and that, what, 1887 is probably on the cards in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, so it's sometimes interesting to see how the market finds fundamental reasons to confirm what the chart is saying, or I suppose it just shows you mm-hmm. how efficient the market really is, right? Like you say, it's been in a consolidation. We obviously saw during the first days of the crash, everything's correlation, the COVID crash, we'll call it that, mm-hmm. everything's correlation is one, right? So S&P comes down, world markets come down, gold comes down on the back of that. And so after a little while, there's this realization that, wait a minute, during difficult times, we should be rushing into safe havens and gold makes a recovery, right? And since then, You know, we went into almost a 3-month period of just absolutely sideways. And if you just measure that range out and, you know, trade the break, that target's 1887. So from a fundamental perspective, to support this argument, you know, you could say that there's a whole bunch of sort of inflation hedging that'll be taking place. There's still second wave fears. I mean, the market will find a reason, right? But ultimately, just looking at the way that the instrument itself is trading, I mean, the expected time frame is to take about as long to get to 1887 as what it was in the consolidation fall, right? So it's not like it's going to happen by next week Tuesday. Mm-hmm. It's going to be up $80 from here. I mean, it'll maybe take a couple of weeks, if not a month or two.
Okay, and the gold stocks themselves, because they have, been in a tear, but truthfully, that undersells the gold stocks. I mean, particularly Harmony. I mean, if you're in them, enjoy the ride. If you're not in, I mean, they've run hard, but I mean, I don't know that this is shorting territory. I mean, if anything, probably wait for the next buy.
Yeah, so I don't actually know. I don't know if my charts go back far enough or if I've looked far enough back to see what the all-time highs are on some of these charts. I mean, I know with Harmony, I remember it trading 150s at some point, but that was long ago, right? So the idea is, anyway, if you, a lot of people are looking at, particularly Harmony, I mean, it's more than doubled in 3 weeks, right? Or it's about doubled in 3 weeks. So, if a lot of people are looking at this and thinking it's gone too far, too fast, we need to be shorting it here. And, you know, the problem is that if there is a continuous push in a gold price, these companies are geared to make money in a higher gold price environment. So I wouldn't bet against them. Yes, Harmony's run really hard, but Goldfields has a beautiful sort of bull flag formation on it, which actually targets 207.50, and it's got another 40 rand to go in that case. I mean, if Goldfields runs another 40 rand, Harmony surely will run as well. You know, that's another equivalent about 20 rand on Harmony to go. And it's not the only one. You know, there's other gold stocks that are looking really, really like bullish as well. So I don't necessarily think that it's worth betting against. I mean, we don't know where it stops. It might come down very quickly. At this stage, honestly, if there's a very sharp fall in Harmony share price, I would probably consider that as a buying opportunity.
Yeah, we got Goldfields.
Follow the trend.
Goldfields is trading at all-time highs. My data goes back to the early 90s. Harmony actually hit 190 Rand in 2002. I'd forgotten those days. There was some corporate stuff happening. I think Goldfields wanted to buy them or something, maybe the other way around. Harmony not yet at those highs, but certainly we've got Goldfields there. We'll leave that there. Petri Radenhuis, founder, Hirenya Capital Advisors. Appreciate the time this morning.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Stefan Engelbrecht, he's a fund manager at Anchor Capital. Stefan, you wrote a great article on gold. You went proper deep. You went all the way back to the 70s and Bretton Woods and the like. And you put a couple of scenarios out there for the sort of investment case for gold. The first is a sort of a doomsday scenario. And frankly, in 2020, with a pandemic, we've got monetary policy. We're the loosest probably ever. And that's saying a lot considering the past decade and change. I mean, this is the first, I suppose, sort of pillar of an investment case for gold, where we are in, I mean, it's a cliched phrase, but we are in uncharted land, left, right, and center.
Yes, it is a, I mean, firstly, I just want to put my perspective out there and how I got to this piece that I wrote is that I am definitely by no means a clunk. I've never been a gold investor. I've always seen it sort of a Warren Buffett type of investment. Why would you want to take it out of the ground? Just go and put it right back into the ground. That was sort of my mentality. So the reason I got to this is exactly that. I started to do some research on what's happening on the monetary policy front. What are the developed markets were, developed countries, their central banks, what are they doing? And what are the implications of this? And I must say, the further I went down that rabbit hole, the more concerned I started to get. And the more I started to see a definite investment case for physical assets. Now, whether it's gold, whether it's, diamonds, whatever physical asset you would like to put in your portfolio. Gold is obviously the easy one.
Stefan, I take your point. I mean, I for 20 years in the markets, I've never been a gold bull. The second point is around inflation, and we haven't seen any in the last 20 years. We've had a decade of quantitative easing, still no inflation coming through, but with supply chains under pressure, we're going to see probably inflation coming in as prices increase, pushed onto consumers. Maybe for the first time this century, inflation is going to come into the system, and that also plays to gold.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, it's twofold there. To add to that point that you just made, one of the key reasons why we didn't see inflation over the past two decades was that China was willing to internalize inflation and basically producing goods at prices that they couldn't actually afford. And how they did that was by increasing their own debt to GDP. So the question is there, how much longer are they willing or able to internalize that inflation from the lack of inflation that the world then benefited from? And secondly, which is also concerning, is if this is now going to happen, if we're going to start seeing inflation, what are the central banks going to do? Because currently the developed world, the governments, their argument is we can push our debt to GDP numbers out to where they are currently. I mean, they're all running in excess of 100% debt to GDP. And the argument is we can do that because our interest rates are so low.
Yeah.
So if you start getting inflation and central banks need to start to increase interest rates, what's going to happen to that debt to GDP number for the developed market?
Yeah, absolutely. And that then brings to the third point, and they're all kind of linking together at the end. I mean, and the third point is gold is a hedge against the market correction. And I'd never seen this data before, but negative years for the S&P 500, more often than not, actually result in a positive year for gold gains. In other words, it really is a safe haven in many senses. And that's before we have worries about inflation and uncharted monetary policy.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair there, I think I was a little bit selective there on my data that I provided. The best hedge is probably still bonds and especially developed market bonds, but you have to question whether that is the case, at present. But, gold is about 65 to 70% effective in negative years for the S&P. So it is quite a good hedge. And that's why perhaps in the current environment, to have a small piece of gold in your portfolio or a small allocation to gold in your portfolio is not a bad idea. Yeah. Once again, I just want to say this is not my base case. I really hope that the world can get through this monetary experiment, with our economy still going strongly. But it's just that, the idea of having a hedge in your portfolio is starting to make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I'm with you. And we obviously hope that everything comes out, but there's a chance it doesn't. We're in a pandemic, our first in 100 years. Last question then. We're talking gold. You talk around having some as a tactical position in a portfolio. Would it be gold in an ETF or maybe coins, or would it perhaps be miners who've had a stonking 2020 so far?
Yeah, that's a big debate in our current investment team as well. So you have to be fully aware that gold miners in general, they are not long-term compounders. They what's the writer's name? Anyway, where you said a miner is a liar standing next to a hole in the ground.
Yeah.
So it is important to be aware that these companies are probably not high quality businesses, but they are very geared to gold. So if you want to have it in a hedge, if you want to go for gold, then you have to have a significantly larger allocation to gold to actually have it as an effective hedge. Because for the S&P falling by 10%, the gold price may rally by 2%, where a gold miner will probably rally by 10 to 20%. So you can definitely, if you want to have that hedge for gold miners, go for about a 5% allocation. If you go for gold, the physical, you will have to increase that quite,
quite substantially.
That's a great point. The miners could give you a small hedge. Stefan Engelbrecht, fund manager, Anchor Capital, really appreciate your time and your insights.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Viv Govender, you find him at Rand Swiss. Viv, you did a great webcast. You were talking a lot, but you spent a lot of time on Tesla. And you know, stock that's been on an absolute tear, you know, now the most valuable vehicle company in the world. And you're quite liking it, but you're not worried about, you're not talking around this as, you know, their first mover of electric vehicles. It's not about the batteries. It's not about concerns of only doing 500,000 cars a year. For you, the Tesla story really is around autonomous vehicles and, importantly, that level 5 autonomous vehicle, which is proper autonomous. No driver, just a car and a computer and a battery, and it can do anything and go anywhere.
Most certainly. Look, I'm not a guaranteed bull on Tesla. I'm just saying that to justify the current valuations on the company, it's not enough just to say it's the first company making electric vehicles. Mm-hmm. Electric vehicles, if anything, are actually easier to make in some ways than a normal gas steam powered vehicle. And I don't think there's the advantage that Tesla can maintain in eternity on this particular kind of vehicle that would make it as valuable as it is currently. And in fact, I think that's, we mentioned in the webcast as well, Elon Musk has come out quite clearly and said he's not looking to make profits on electric vehicles. He will make a reasonable profit and enough to satisfy his investors, and that's about it. To justify the kind of pricing we're seeing right now, and you have to look at the other options. One is the battery aspect of Tesla, and the other one is the autonomous vehicles. And I think of the two aspects, I would think the autonomous vehicle one has the biggest upside that can justify the risk you're taking, can justify the investment that you're putting in at this level. Already more valuable than a VW, or more valuable than Toyota.
Yeah, I mean, it, autonomous vehicles will be, it'll be a game changer that frankly, I we're going to struggle to comprehend. I mean, you know, we won't need vehicles. Obviously, we'll just call a car in an app. It'll take us wherever we want to go, whether that be down the road to dinner or whether it be down to Durban for a weekend away. But there's a lot more application to it than simply just those autonomous, you know, the vehicles we get into. It's going to be around delivery. Frankly, it can be around mining. It can be in agriculture. It will change fundamentally so many industries as we know right now.
Yes, I mean, this is a problem that once you solve it for, you know, driving a vehicle, a car that can carry a human being, it's immediately solved as well for, you know, a forklift, probably solved for, you know, ships, is probably even solved for a number of other vehicles, especially vehicles that don't carry human beings, but maybe just carrying cargo, even mm-hmm. if the cargo is just the burger you order from McDonald's.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, when I think cargo, I think of giant freight, but it could just be that little delivery vehicle. And Tesla's already got some autonomous to it. They call it their autopilot. There's been some deaths around it, although in all cases it's been a driver error rather than software error. Is this something, I mean, what sort of timeline would you expect this to happen? Is this sort of the next 5 or 10 years, or is this still maybe a 20 or 30 year journey to that level 5 autonomous?
In a way, the in-between between, you know, the human-driven and totally autonomous-driven is actually a little more difficult than totally autonomous-driven because, you know, humans will step in at certain times and, you know, that could obviously mess things up with regards to the autonomous vehicle in certain ways. Maybe the totally autonomous, transport system would actually be easier to run. If every car was autonomous, if every car, you know, would actually be much easier than having some human drivers or some autonomous drivers. In terms of the timeline, Elon Musk has said this week, I think it is, that he's expecting it to be done within a year or so. Obviously, Elon Musk's timelines are extremely optimistic. Does indicate that this is not something that's a 30-year horizon. If it's doable, it's probably doable in the next, say, 5 years. And what you have to understand is that the world after we have autonomous vehicles is going to be as different as the world before and after we had the internet, before and after we had cell phones. It's such a huge change in how we as a society will operate.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I'm old enough to remember the pre-internet days. I remember when my cell phone was just that. It made calls. did SMS and played Snake. That was about it. The other challenge that he's going to have, and, you know, I take your point on Elon Musk and his timelines, and also take the point, you know, never underestimate Elon Musk, is going to be regulatory process in terms of governments getting comfortable, governments getting up to speed. Truthfully, governments being comfortable with autonomous vehicles on their roads, you know, sort of particularly with that blend of autonomous and non-autonomous.
Yes, most certainly. If an autonomous vehicle gets into an accident, it's the fault of the autonomous vehicle. Who's responsible for that? But that being said, once they do become, you know, let's just say it's in a scenario where they do work and they are searching to be significantly safer, maybe say 5 to 10 times safer, I would actually believe that it would be very difficult for a government to stop them coming on the road, because they'd be inundated with lawsuits from people that have died due to mm-hmm. accidents, saying that if you had allowed them on the road, my father or my husband or my wife would not have been killed. And that would be a very powerful kind of incentive to keep pushing through these vehicles once they are shown to be significantly safer than normal driving.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I suppose as soon as it gains momentum, you almost have to do it because it is safer. And then people without them, it'll be like not wearing a mask in a pandemic. You mean you drove your own vehicle? Viv Govender, Rand Swiss, great insights. Really appreciate your time.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
That's it for today. You'll find the podcast every morning from 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, or wherever you get your good podcasts from. Chat to us on Twitter, Facebook. Use the hashtag MoneyWebNow. This show was proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact. Protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. A massive thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.